Welcome to Vita Poetica Journals podcast. We're an online journal featuring creative work explored through a spiritual lens and a publication of the Vita Poetica Arts and Faith Collective. Today on the podcast, we have poet Philip Agian sharing three of his poems published in our summer issue. They're called Jurisdiction, Why Do You Ask My Name, and The Old Road to Gary. Philip Agian holds a PhD in Renaissance drama and theology from UC Irvine, as well as an MA in poetry from the University of Missouri. He teaches literature and religious studies and has published in journals like Zizova, Heron Tree, Poor Yorick, and Zocalo Public Square. He lives in California with his wife and children. His poetry and art can be found at www.philipagian.com. Here's Philip.
Hello, my name is Philip Agian. I am a Los Angeles-based writer, artist, and educator. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my poems and also to read them. I hope you enjoy them. The poem Jurisdiction is one of many that I have written during a trip to a museum, in this case, the Getty Museum in North Los Angeles. I've tried to make a practice of writing a poem as a way of slowing myself down in a place where I'm inundated by so many different works of art, and you can feel a little bit lost or overwhelmed, and using language as a way to see something, and by exploring and picturing it through a different medium. This particular practice belongs to the larger and richer tradition of ekphrasis, where works of art are described as a foundation for a different literary or rhetorical exercise. I found myself drawn to this painting, one of the smaller in the gallery at the time, and the more I studied it, the more I found myself really interested in responding to the painting's allegorical drama. Jurisdiction. After Pierre Paul Proudhon's Justice and Divine Vengeance Pursuing Crime. One can't help but notice the pitiful flame of that apparently divine torch. It sputters as though the wood were wet or needs shelter from an easterly gale. Divine Vengeance might have preferred a brighter interrogation for his subject. Even de la Tour's glass-doubled candlestick from the penitent Magdalene would have been improvement. What light this bashful brand offers seems all too outshined by the brighter, if more conspiratorial, moon, which, though full, remains somewhat clouded beyond easy prosecution. Its beams linger with merciless glare on the skin of the corpse, all the more spectral for being recently stripped. And though he pursues close behind, no one's getting justice tonight, which is to say, justice will not get anyone tonight, or even soon. Divine Vengeance seems to lead the way with arms outstretched, but the hesitation in his face is plain. Night wind fills his wings, but doubts assail his mind and derail his focus. He turns to Justice, not blind for once, and seems to ask, "Are we sure this is our guy?" Never mind that the dead man's coat billows from the clutches of the murderer, not so much fleeing the scene of the crime as trying not to trip over his victim's violated contortion. Or, as if remembering previous muck-ups, Divine Vengeance frets over issues of procedure, the imminent paperwork which must ensue when charges are brought, and defers to Justice. "Why don't you take him? I'm not sure I have jurisdiction here." Wherever here is. As for Justice, it must be said, he should have brought a longer sword, though we doubt not of its sharpness. But the moment after this one seems ripe for error, in his zeal for action, he's likely to swing in a wild arc and clip his neighbor's feathers, or swat that half-hearted heat to the ground. And why bring the scales? So delicate in their motions and balance, shouldn't they have been better left at the courthouse or temple? I suppose some gratitude is in order for so small a canvas, as though Proudhon couldn't bring himself to depict such bleakness on a larger scale. to see the world and its nights, as we all too often suspect. Divinity, again, averts its gaze from our scene, apprehending neither the criminal nor his despoiled prey. And though justice arms himself with shining devices, each one is more trinket than tool, chosen haphazardly. What comfort this? Little. But more yet than offered to the murderer himself, who will, we hope, always be looking over his shoulder, whose stolen coat will never adequately warm, and whose bare feet can only bruise in constant flight. Why Do You Ask My Name is a poem that belongs to a larger series in which I respond to questions that God asks of people in Scripture. The first of these questions happens in Genesis 3, where God asks Adam and Eve, "Where are you?" But if we assume God's omniscience, these questions aren't interested in gathering information the way that you and I use questions to gather information. They're rhetorical, and they often lead to unusual or unexpected disclosures and epiphanies. I worked on this poem for over 2 years, and I struggled to find the right approach, but I at last succeeded by writing the poem as a sestina, which has a very strict formal outline and a number of conventions, as each of the 6 stanzas have 6 lines, and each of these lines must end in one of 6 words, and these words must be chosen very carefully. There's an odd and rewarding relationship between the sestina and the poem's subject matter. The form is one that is constantly, if you will, wrestling with itself, revisiting and repurposing the same words and bringing them forward to new uses, kind of like Jacob's relationship with everyone else. Why Do You Ask My Name? From Genesis 32:29. Before I had a cry, I had a grip. They saw his hair, but then they saw my hold around his heel and named me for my grasp. And still astonished by his hair, his name was Adjective. Always simple at heart, Isaac saw only brothers in that blood. To my firstborn shall go, by right of blood and tradition, the blessing of my name. His hands shake with the past. My father's grip on history was forged as flames took hold of wounds dealt by his father's knife and grasp. But for the lamb, it would have been his heart. My brother has the same blind, foolish heart. What was birthright? He wanted to take hold of all the things that came within his grip, the flesh that ripped when arrows left his grasp. It was easy to cheat him from his blood. Who trusts your eye will not suspect your name. Esau now keeps a bone he will not name, a sharpened shard of game uncleaned of blood from the remains of my deceit. Some hold yet haunts the butchered shaft and knuckled grip still reaching for the missing hip. His heart now contemplates another for its grasp. Such clutching is my heritage. What grasp did you advise to Abram to keep hold of that first covenant? Alone your heart upholds the stars, the promise of his name. But what of me? What light shines in my blood? I dreamt of gold ladders I dared not grip. The truth is that nothing stays in my grip. A swindled blessing burns here in my blood. No way to win, I'd settle for your name. I ought to know there's little that my heart can keep. You, too, are slipping from my grasp as night admits defeat and loses hold. A name might be a place to hold a man if he's out of your grasp and grip is gone. My blood near spent, I may soften your heart. The poem The Old Road to Gary belongs to a larger series of poems, each of which takes its subject matter from the title of an old fiddle tune by the same name from the tradition of English folk music known as the Ceilidh, spelled C-E-I-L-I-D-H. These songs seldom have lyrics, but as is so often the case with instrumental songs, they usually have evocative and sometimes ridiculous titles, like The Pig Town, Old Hag You Have Killed Me, and The Soup Dragon. I enjoy the exercise of coming up with a poem constrained by the limitations or possibilities of the title. The Old Road to Gary. The new highway to Gary surpasses superlative, is a miracle of convenience, and all who take it report excellent fuel economy, napping children, and apparently the road even sings to them. Cheeky engineers etched grooves into the concrete so that if you drive between 50 and 100 miles per hour, your tires will whine, hum, or roar Beethoven at you. Road to Joy, they call it. It switches to his Fifth Symphony if you start veering off the shoulder. Har har. I can only surmise this would have pleased him immensely, and in short order he would have demanded the construction of a symphonic autobahn, leading nowhere in particular. Yes, all reached their destination even ahead of schedule. Still, I've left too many cities where I wanted to stay. Friends there bade me endure, having also taken new and newish roads. In Manhattan, I stood between Rockefeller Plaza and Radio City Music Hall like a piece of gristle caught between the back molars, whose business it is to gleam and crush. Sooner or later, the floss always came. Escorted out or exiled thus, I will attempt the other way to Gary, and I shall expect to get lost insofar as I will occasionally lose my sense of direction, which is to say, that blithe confidence that tends to come with Google Maps. I expect to lose sight of the path insofar as a path has come to be known as a narrow congregation of pebbles, or a scar of dirt that skews along a mountain's jaw, where plants largely forbear to grow. I shall hope to ask for help from the birds in the manner of St. Francis, be they condor or falcon. One mustn't be too choosy. I shall hope to laugh and not panic when I lose my pocket knife and say to myself, the Lord has need of it. Hunger shall finally be my companion and walk with me some distance, disclosing her face and voice, which I have only ever suspected from great distance. Such has been her reputation. I shall hope to approach, if not arrive upon gratitude, before I reach the city limits, myself at last a ruddy sun in setting day. Then to be content with my light, such as it shines, and descend trailing stories like clouds, not all of them told, but all of them seen.
That was Philip Agian reading his three poems published in our summer issue, Jurisdiction, Why Do You Ask My Name?, and The Old Road to Gary. You can learn more about Vita Poetica at the website in our podcast description, www.vitapoetica.org, where you can find details on how to submit to the journal and other ways to get involved. Thanks for listening, and more soon.